Back together again, you and I chatting it up Tuesday style, March 24th, 2026, right here on Connecticut Today, where we welcome back to the show a couple of our favorites, Republican State Senate member Rob Sampson and Yankee Institute blogger Megan Portfolio. They both commented on what's going on and maybe not going on at the state capitol. I also had a few thoughts of my own on the honesty of many Connecticut state lawmakers.
All right, I hear it's been a busy few days at the Capitol. I wasn't there, neither were, I would imagine, many of you. So we'll get a view from the Republican side of things. Our buddy, our pal, State Senate member Rob Sampson is going to be joining us right now. Rob, of course, represents the 16th State Senate District, portions thereof, Cheshire, Prospect, Southington, Wolcott, and Waterbury. As well, because we love the Brass City. Hey, Rob, it's Paul again. How are you, man?
I'm doing well, Paul. Thanks for having me.
Good times up there. First of all, let me ask you this. A bill that was worrying the heck out of me, and you know that is bad when a high-ranking Democrat like Matt Ritter says, we can't do this. The Regulations and Review Committee, do I understand that bill to set it up now to have a majority and a minority, is that bill dead? Is that right?
Well, nothing is permanently dead in that place. Sad to say, Paul. Yeah. They resurrection occurs on a regular basis. It's so funny, I'm calling you from a church parking lot.
Yeah.
But the fact of the matter is that the bill did die in committee.
Okay.
It was actually in the Government Administration and Elections Committee, where I am the Senate ranking member.
Okay.
And it was on the agenda on Friday, a meeting that we got 52 bills on the agenda at 6 o'clock the day before. and then they gave us substitute language, basically new language for almost half the bills that morning, like an hour before the meeting.
It's
impossible to even go through that stuff. I managed to get the chairs to give us a couple hours, but then we kept them there till midnight because we needed to find out what was in those bills. And one of the items on the agenda was that one.
Yeah.
And they did not do it. They skipped over it. And then Monday, they brought us in for another GAE meeting, and it was on the agenda again. It was the last item on the agenda, and they didn't do it. At the end of the day, they just skipped over it at the end. So presumably they didn't have the will to face that debate in the committee. And presumably the bill's dead, but you never know.
They
can bring that language back in something else later if they choose.
Yeah, but Rob, here's the frightening thing. I give Speaker Ritter credit. I give Leader Candelora credit. They got up there bipartisan and said, no, this thing has been up and running since 1972. It serves a purpose, and it's one of the last bastions of real bipartisanship there. But who was, Rob, I've asked people, they've told me off the record, nobody really knows who said beyond the committee, let's do this. Do we know, will we ever find out who wanted to blow this committee balance up?
I don't think you're going to find out officially.
Yeah.
Because the bill did come forward as a committee bill.
Okay.
Raised by the two chairs. I mean, at the end of the day, they're the officials responsible. That would be Senator May Flexer and Representative Matt Blumenthal.
Ah.
I mean, that's where the buck stops. I don't think they had anything to do with the bill, frankly. I think
really?
It came from somebody in their leadership.
Ah.
And if I had to guess, it would be Jason Rojas, who is the majority leader of the House. But the thing is that, you know, there's a lot of people that are speculating this has something to do with the changes in mandated vaccines or the homeschooling.
I read that.
And, you know, it may have something to do with that, but I also think that there are other situations where the bipartisan nature of the Regs Review Committee got in the way of the agenda of the Democrats. And I can list you a few. I mean, EV mandates, that was stopped in that committee purely because it is a truly, bipartisan, even number of Democrats and Republicans committee.
Yeah.
So it gets in their way occasionally. And I think that the arrogance, Paul, I can't even tell you. They think they should just get rid of anything that stands in their way, including me and my microphone or the Regs Review Committee or the idea that people want to come and testify in huge numbers. They seem completely put off by the idea that they've actually got to respect the will of the people.
So Rob Sampson is the guest, 16th District Republican, a state Senate member. Rob and his microphone do a great job up there, keeping people there for late hours, getting them to squirm with tough questions. The landlord's bill, Rob, whenever I bring those issues up on the show, I hear from landlords past and present. What's the deal with that and the change or the modification or the implementation of a no-fault eviction?
Right. Yeah, well, there's a number of bills that are going to affect landlord-tenant law, but that is the big one, no question about it. The so-called Just Cause eviction bill.
I'm sorry,
it has nothing to do it has nothing to do with evictions at all. It has to do with the long understood idea that when you rent a property, there's a beginning date and an expiration date. Just like if you rent a car.
Yeah.
If you rent a car for 3 days and guess what? You're like, oh, I think I'm going to keep it. You know, guess what? You stole the car, right? Right? You know, you didn't bring it back in time. Well, what the Democrats are suggesting is that somehow when a tenant goes beyond the actual expiration date of the lease, they have control of the property, not the landlord. So if I'm a landlord, I'm not allowed to use this property for myself. I can't do renovations. I can't decide to put a family member in there that I want to help out rather than putting my tenant back in. It is a really bad bill. But the little dirty secret about it, Paul, is that this is not landlords versus tenants.
Okay.
And I'm not taking the side of the landlords.
Sure.
I am very concerned about tenants, too, because you know what will happen? Is the moment you put something like this into effect, landlords are going to be that much more skeptical of tenant applicants. They're going to put that much more scrutiny on every person that comes to them. And I really do think it's the borderline tenants, the ones without the perfect job history or credit history. Those are the people who are clamoring for this bill. And guess what? They're the first people who are going to end up losing out. Because the landlords are only going to take perfect tenants at that point. No more taking chances.
Interesting. Couple of more bills, Rob, while we have you here. I'm sorry for laughing, but really, in a state with runaway electric bills, we're worried about, Rob Sampson, how many self-checkouts are open in supermarkets. What is that still breathing, or what's the deal with the bill that would tell private employers, major supermarket chains, Rob Sampson, of how many real live checkers they have to have on if their self-checkouts are humming away?
Right, right. So this bill is very much alive. I serve as the ranking member of the Labor Committee, too. I get all the live ones, Paul. that bill is one of the new premier priority objects of affection for the Connecticut Democrats. They bring a lot of their same stuff back, striking workers and all that. But this is a new one. And this bill is all about protecting labor, you know, by forcing not just grocery stores, by the way, but they define groceries as like any home maintenance thing. So now you've got Walmart's in there, Home Depot, Costco. And basically what's going to happen is they're going to tell these stores that you can't have too many self-checkout lanes. You're going to have to man them instead. And, of course, that's going to drive up costs. Consumers are going to end up having to pay for that additional labor. And, in a state where, you know, we're like maybe the most unaffordable place to live outside of California, it just doesn't make a lot of sense.
Finally, Rob, the major gun bill, this bill concerning the so-called Glock switches and threatening Glock and other manufacturers to say, hey, if your guns are easily or too easily able to be modified by G-Rob, I don't know, criminals, we're going to go after the gun company. I know, wacky, isn't it? Criminals, they don't care what you guys or gals do up there, Rob. Where does that Glock switch bill stand now, as far as you know?
Well, there's two anti-gun bills in the legislature, and they're both in the Judiciary Committee. I don't serve there, but I've testified in opposition to both bills. And I believe that debate and vote of the committee is actually happening today.
Oh, okay.
I heard somebody mention to me that they may have combined the bills.
Oh.
So one part of it is about this supposed Glock switch, although I think it's a lot more extensive than that. I think it's going to actually make almost any striker-fired firearm, if folks know what that is, illegal in Connecticut, which does nothing, as you mentioned. I mean, it's just simply going to affect law-abiding citizens. criminals will still have their hands on guns. They'll still steal firearms. They'll get them in other states. They'll bring them here. I mean, or they'll just use something else. You know what I mean? It's like, I don't understand why you're making the lives of people that follow the rules more difficult.
Yeah.
But I think really all of this gun control is about the Democrats flexing their muscles to show us that they're in charge and they're hostile to law-abiding gun ownership in Connecticut. I think they're trying to show off, really, that they're that this Connecticut is going to be the blue sanctuary for the entire U.S. Republicans control the White House and Congress and most state governments. And the Democrats are like, you know what? We're going to turn Connecticut into the safe haven for every loony progressive idea that there is. So we're going to do all of them.
Rob,
Rob, that's where we are.
Don't ever hold back. Just do me a favor. Next time you're on, don't hold back. Rob Sampson joins us, 16th District Republican State Senate member, Southington, Wolcott, Waterbury, Prospect, and Cheshire. Rob, be good, and we'll talk down the road. Thank you, sir.
Always my pleasure.
All right. Thanks. Appreciate it. Listen, man, you may love him, you may not. Rob Sampson is one guy in the General Assembly. When he grabs the microphone, people perk up. Megan Portfolio joins us in this slot every Tuesday right here at WICC. She, of course, writes the Hartford Portfolio blog for the Yankee Institute and watches with a keen eye as to what's going on in the General Assembly. Megan, good afternoon. How are you?
Good afternoon. I'm doing well. I get to watch CTN from in my nice office with my sweatpants on, but I got to go to the Capitol tomorrow, so I'm going to have to dig out a suit.
Wow.
I got to look like a big girl. I'm adulting.
Yeah. Okay, so they're actually sending you there. Well, that's good. I mean, it's like you can only watch so many games on TV. You got to go to the ballpark once or twice, right?
I know. I hope I get good seats because I'm very excited.
Yeah. Well, now, what are you going to be, before we talk about what you have today, what are you going to be scoping out tomorrow? Anything in particular?
There's some climate breakfast tomorrow, which I'm going to check out. But the House is in session, and is it their first official one that's not like an ESER or some sketchiness? It's like one of their beginning ones. So it won't be too exciting. It'll probably be a lot of nominations, but it's still fun to go.
Okay. Now, I was heartened to hear from you and other people, I guess this bill that would have imbalanced the Regulations and Review Commission is dead for now. Nothing really dies up there. But we still, and I asked Rob Sampson this last hour. He doesn't know either. We know what committee this came out of, Megan, but we really don't know who on that committee said, let's do this, or do you have other info?
I don't, and that's when I'm on a mission to try to find out tomorrow, but people are like, you know, loose lips sink ships, so no one's really talking. But I'm hoping to talk to some of my friends and see if we can root this out. But thanks to all, you know, like your callers and everyone that pays attention, because this bill would have gone through, and it sounds wicked boring.
Yeah.
Like, why does this matter to me? But if it wasn't balanced, we'd all be forced to drive electric cars right now, because that's how important that committee is. And because everyone just reached out and contacted lawmakers, wrote letters, testified, they essentially killed it. But they kind of did me dirty because it was on the agenda for Friday night. Mm-hmm. And so I got to spend my Friday night watching CTN. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden they got to the bill and they skipped over it. And I was like, you sons of guns.
Easy. Yeah. Yeah. Listen, so, okay. So you'll try to find that out, which is good. Now, in one of your current pieces, you talk about what, billions and billions of dollars more for, let me guess here, green initiatives? Is that what we're talking about again here?
Oh, yes. Another Tuesday on the Paul Pacelli Show.
Yes.
And another Tuesday I get to talk about how our electric rates are going in the wrong direction.
Yes.
So it's pretty simple. Residential properties, commercial properties, if they take part in this program, what happens is they install solar, and any excess solar power that's generated that they're not using, the utilities are going to be forced to buy it.
Forced
to buy it.
Okay.
So you're going to put on some solar panels at your house. I guess Wallingford's a bad example.
Yeah.
But you're going to put these on your house, and you're going to get into a contract with the utility, and they're going to pay you for that excess power, which sounds really great.
Okay.
Good for you. You're saving money with your solar, and you're going to get a little kickback from the utility, but it's not so great because someone has to pay for that. And guess who that is?
Yeah. So
all the other ratepayers.
So it's going to be
tacked onto our bill. And UI, the second largest electrical utility in the state,
yeah,
they're saying in their testimony, it's going to cost $11 billion. That's $11 billion that's going to get, you know, shuffled around on all of our bills. And we don't even have solar. Now, I know proponents will say, yes, but you're getting benefit because, you know, they're buying the clean energy and it's good for the environment. Mm-hmm. But residential solar is 3 to 5 times more expensive than utility grade solar. So you're making them buy all this residential excess solar power that's three to five times higher than on the commercial. So I can say, yeah, I can see them saying, hey, let's go with the commercial and the large scale projects because there's a lot more energy that's produced that they can buy back, which is good for the grid.
Yeah.
And, you know, you pay. But why are we even getting involved in this residential area? Like the residential consumer is already saving money by having the solar. So, I mean, I don't see any need to even have this at all. And it's extremely offensive to me that I have to pay for it.
So is now, what are the odds that this thing actually happens and is a done deal or not?
The odds are pretty high that it's going to be a done deal, but Katie Dykes, the commissioner of DEEP, had some reservations about the way the rates were getting locked in. I mm-hmm. guess they're not using any like competition to get the rates down, that they're doing this fixed. They have like this fixed model. So yeah, once you get in the program, it's this fixed price that you're going to get through. I think it's up to 20 years. Nigerians is going to get this benefit. If you're residential, they're probably not going to send you a check. It's going to come off of your bill. But regardless, it's still kind of nonsense. So I do anticipate some changes to it. One of the cringiest phrases I hear from these people is they say the bill is a work in progress.
Oh,
like,
God.
I'm not paying you. If it's a work, like, let's get the progress done and then let's vote on it. Like, I hate this work. And they say it all the time. They must say it at least like once a day. Oh, this is a work in progress. Like, no, we're paying you to have a complete, you know, workable bill that's mm-hmm. going to benefit everyone in Connecticut, not these works in progress, kind of like the bottle bill was a work in progress, and we're still trying to fix that monstrosity.
Yeah, and I remember you were one of the first people, were you not, to kind of ring the bell on this, saying, wait a minute, kids, if we're going to give back 10 cents and everybody else is going to give back 5 cents,
I didn't invent this information.
Yeah.
There's an actual bottle bill commission. That's where I heard it. And they had a whole presentation for the government about this and about the problems. And they're just like, oh, you know, we're Connecticut. We're just going to we do things better here. And, well, it didn't get any better. Now it's worse.
Do me a favor.
This is what happens when we have a works in progress.
Yeah. Well, yeah. People would say this show's a work in progress. But yes, go ahead.
But back to electricity. This isn't the only bill that's threatening to increase our rates. We've got this. They want to have a surcharge on fossil fuel infrastructure of 5%. They're not going to pay that. That's going to get put down on us.
Of course.
And then
they
also have that climate super fund.
Yeah.
And so we're going to have to pay for that also. And then outside of the legislature, we have that whole REGI program, the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, and they're increasing the cost for the carbon offset credits. That's reflected in our supply side of our bill. So we've got four things that are going to be jacking up our electric bills. And the first thing the Energy and Environment Committees, you know, said in the beginning of the session was we acknowledge that electric bills are high and we need to tackle affordability. But none of those bills are going to do anything about affordability.
And again, as I say all the time, because Megan, the latest tally came out this week, Connecticut is now number 2 in the country in electric bills. So I said the other day right here, we're slacking off here. If we're going to be in the top 5, why not be number 1? So hopefully we get to the number 1, you know, most expensive bill.
No, yeah, let's not, because I literally just published an article about our rate of return on our taxes.
Yeah.
And we're actually we're ranked 40th.
Of course.
40th.
Of course. Hey, do me a favor. If you're going to be sniffing around the Capitol tomorrow in your spiffy business suit, find out let me know. Text me what the deal is on that.
If I hear any gossip, you will be on speed dial. I will be texting you.
I am also just fascinated with the self-checkout bill, too, because we have nothing else to worry about. So let's.
Oh, yeah. I'm working on another piece on that also.
You are. Look at that. All right, folks, check it out. The Hartford Portfolio, Megan Portfolio, the guest. Hey, Megan, thanks. We appreciate it. Take care and be careful of the Capitol under the dome tomorrow. tomorrow. Okay?
Yeah, I'll make sure I take my rings off my fingers before I shake anyone's hand.
All right, Megan
Portfolio. Just kidding.
Thanks, Megan. Appreciate it. You know, from about the time we're in, what, you figure middle school on up, right, into junior high and high school and college, and then we become adults, and then we go to the workplace or whatever, and we buy stuff. From about the time that we're in middle school, we're told and we understand and kind of put some meaning as to what it means to put your name on something or to, you know, sign your names out here, sign this, sign here. You're like, whoa, what am I doing here? Well, you're putting your name on something that is going to ascribe your responsibility to it. And after we do it once or twice or three times in our child lives or in our junior adult or adult lives, we say, hey, if something's really big, if we're buying something or we say something or we want to do something, we have to put our signature to it, our name to it in some way, shape, or form. You may not physically sign something, but, you know, you ascribe yourself to something. Okay, all well and good. Good, well and good. Adultism 101. But is something disturbing? It happened in Hartford over the past two or three days, and it's not disturbing because it happened, and exactly the opposite. The good part is I can tell you that a big controversial thing is not going to happen, but here's the thing. The thing of the thing is right now, you ready for this? We have lawmakers in Hartford, and again, I double-checked this with some contacts I have watching this process very carefully, very slowly, in fact, with more detail than why here, your happy, friendly little pudgy 2-6 host on WICC. We still don't know, as far as 2:09 on this Tuesday, March 24th, who were the protagonists, if you will, who were the people, who were the, you hate to say it, lawmakers, who wanted to maybe get rid and put their signatures on the last vestige of bipartisanship in Hartford. Now, you may know where I'm going here. There was a bill. Now, I was told today the bill is dead. So that's good. And this is what we have talked about with several guests here on Melissa's show and my show over the past few days. But we still don't know who thought this was a good idea. That's frightening. In fact, when you come right down to it, that may be more frightening than what they wanted to do as well. Now, you may remember, according to this story here from Paul Hughes in the Connecticut Insider, there was a rebuke by the top Democrat and top Republican in the state House to upend a long-standing tradition of oversight and bipartisan review of state regulations. Now, we talked about this. Think back over the past few days. There was a bill to get rid of the 50-50 split on the General Assembly's Regulation Review Committee. And that was going to happen the day before another committee was set to vote on a bill proposing to change its composition from bipartisan to partisan. So understand what almost happened here. We almost had a bill. In fact, we did have the bill, but it has now died. That's what I've been told. We had a serious effort by people who will not step forward. That's the really crazy and scary thing here. You have people who, for whatever reason, have chosen not to step forward here while some other legislative leaders did and said, this is a bad idea. So when you have Democratic House Speaker Matt Ritter and Republican House Minority Leader Vin Candelora a few days ago saying the Regulation Review Committee, which, as was explained to us, is kind of this rubber stamp committee that's got to okay all the bills and make sure the implementation goes okay. When you have somebody there who says, nah, I want to make this a partisan commission. Right now, it is 14 people each. It's 7 Democrats and 7 Republicans. So 7 and 7 is 14. So that, if there's any problems in some bills that may have been passed, this committee can say, hey, we've got to make changes, or we have to implement this a certain way. But here's the thing, for some people in the General Assembly, they didn't like that because they thought it might have been getting in the way of some pet projects of theirs, or they were so partisan that they didn't want, get this, they were so partisan they didn't want bipartisanship on a committee that's been around since 1972. But there's a more, there's even a more frightening and insidious to this insidious aspect to this whole thing. I asked a couple, three of my contacts today, and they all said the same thing. I asked them, do we know who introduced this specifically? In other words, whose idea was this? And you know what? Nobody knows. How is that possible? Nobody knows. We'll talk about that coming back. But here's my question, and you read stuff like this, and it forces me to ask this question. As we, as you and I, get up and underway here, do you trust lawmakers in Hartford to make the right decisions for the people of Connecticut? I know that sounds like a strange question, but I'll tell you why it's not. Coming up, 203-333-9422-333-WICC. Yes, so thank you, Mr. Announcer Guy. And as you and I sit here chatting it up on this Tuesday, the 24th of March, 2026, this much we know. We know that there is a legislator or group of legislators or a group of a party of legislators. I'm not really sure. But what we do know is there are some forces in Hartford who very openly but with a slight hand tried to get rid of, and they apparently made no bones about it, although they won't put their name to it. I wonder why. There's a group of legislators in Hartford who have said, hey, they want to rework this key committee. Without getting too much in the weeds here, it's a bipartisan committee. Now, the bill died today, thankfully. HB 5554 would have changed the makeup of the Regulation Review Committee. This gets a little wonkish. I don't want your eyes to glaze over. But it would have changed the structure of regulation and review from an equally divided, right, 14-person body. How about that? 7 people of one party from the House and Senate and 7 people of another party from the House and Senate. And they would have gotten together and made sure that laws can be implemented or are being implemented properly in the state of Connecticut. Well, somebody introduced a bill, follow along here, to change that from a 7-7 split to an 8-6 proportion, 8 seats going to the party in power in Hartford. Translated, Democrats. So understand what happened here. There's two aspects you have to understand here. At 203-333-9422-333-WICC. Whomever these people are, and here's the thing, we still don't know. Because I'm looking at the bill right now, and it doesn't say there's a spot in the bill where you could put the names of co-sponsors and all that stuff. It doesn't say anything. It just says introduced by the GAE, which is the committee up in Hartford. So the committee and Moss, I guess, put this forward. You know why? I guess whoever thought or whomever thought, unless they all did, which is scarier than just covering up for individuals, a lot of people may have thought that they don't want to be up front and say, hey, I'm submitting this bill to get rid of and destroy what's ever left of bipartisanship in Hartford. Now, that may sound a little much, but what else could this have been? Now, this is a very, 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 very important committee here. The primary purpose, as has been explained to us on this program by folks like Chris Caruso and others, of the Regulation Review Committee is simply to make sure that new regulations, new laws, or revisions to existing laws that state agencies propose reflect and do not, get this, circumvent legislative intent because regulations have the force of law. So if you're changing a regulation with a bill, you've got to say, hey, this has to be legitimate here. So the way this is usually done is through, and 43 or 44 other states do it this way. Some states do have majorities on that committee. We don't do it here that way in Connecticut. We do it that each side has seven people apiece, seven Democrats, seven Republicans. But apparently, to at least some members of the ruling party up there, the Democratic Party, they didn't like that. But here's the thing. If you don't like that, you should just come out and say it. The committee also double checks that proposed regulations do not conflict with state or federal laws or the Connecticut or even the U.S. constitutions. So I ask you, why is that anything but bipartisan? And I also ask you, if somebody wants to change that and make it, in fact, a partisan process, why not put your names on it? Maybe because you don't want to step up to the plate? Now, we don't know that. Again, my contacts earlier today said they're looking. They're hearing things, but hearing things is not good enough to say, oh, this was Senator so-and-so or Representative so-and-so. I have my thoughts, and I think I said them once or twice the other day, but I'm not going to say them again. So again, this begs a bigger question. And I'm already getting the duh types of answers on this one. At facebook.com/voiceofct. In light of this whole thing, do you trust lawmakers in Hartford to make the right decisions for the people of Connecticut? Because apparently there are some people up there who wanted to, I guess, legally and legislatively blow up one of the last bastions of bipartisanship we had in this state. It's not perfect. It's kind of a wonkish committee, but if you want to get rid of it, how about you put your names on it so we know come election time whether we like that or not? Again, I have my thoughts. They are names that are mentioned a lot on this program, but I mentioned a lot of names. I'm going to keep it at that. But I have people sniffing around on this. So what do you think? You take a look at this regulations and review kerfuffle here. And I ask you, do you trust lawmakers in Hartford to make the right decisions for the people of Connecticut? Or as the late, great Governor Bill O'Neill used to say, the state of Connecticut. 203-333-9422-333-WICC.